And the purpose of this meeting had a particular title, which is what we're going to do about the arts in Brighton. So it's a big question, really. And it began initially from a conversation that Adrian and I had about the fact this conversation happens a lot and it never seems to get anywhere. And so that's why we focused it on what are we going to do. So there is a danger here that what we could have is just a big moan grumble fest again about the arts. But the starting point is a big grumble. And it's a grumble maybe beyond Brighton too, which is that I did my own little bit of research recently, and of the people I spoke to, more than 95% of people who claim to be artists have not made a sustainable living at it for the past number of years. And then started to have clever narratives about how they did quite arty or creative things, but it wasn't what they really wanted to do, and that funded the rest of it. And just a couple of other kind of background things is we've got some very different people in the room, but we've already got over a couple of thousand years of life experience here. And so we want the conversation to happen here as well. It's going to be a disaster if we all just start advocating and spouting all the usual stuff. So I'm kind of hoping that we could all just assume we've had all the conversations before. We are quite frustrated that we can't make a living in the arts. We're quite frustrated with our local government and our national governments for not funding the arts properly, not looking to the arts as the place for inspiration on where to go next, but as a sort of luxury on the edges of things too. And so there is a question about what we can do about the arts, and I'm inviting you to imagine, if you can, that you've got answers to those questions and that we've got an unlimited budget as well, and so on. But if I hand you the microphone, and I'm going to be doing that today, I will take it off you if you don't address the question, what are we going to do about the arts? Because that's what we're trying to get to here. We have venues represented, we have artists represented, we have people who are funded, who aren't funded, we have local government here as well. So I'm going to give you all the opportunity to speak. The way to do that is to raise your hand, and then I will then fail to get to you because other people want to speak and so on. But I'll try and facilitate this as much as possible. I have mentioned this before to some of my friends, but in a recent poll, when people are asked, actually in their entire lives, of the top 10 things that irritate them most in life, the facilitators and trainers were in the top 10 of the list. And also in the same list was icebreakers as well. And I do have a story, and this is true, from a friend who was paid a lot of money to facilitate a big public meeting. There were a lot more people, and she started to facilitate it. She began with names, and that put the irritation up, because that took about a quarter of the meeting. She then got people into groups so that nobody actually would hear anybody because we'd be in safe groups. That irritated people even more. And then just using her own intuition, she got the mic and announced she was going for a poo and disappeared and came back at the end of the meeting and it had just taken off without her. So I'm just going to really take the mic round. I'm going to take the recording device round as well. But just to start off with a few kind of seeding thoughts, I'm going to be very upfront that Adrian and I were in a conversation, and it's just an example where there was a lot of anger and stuff in the media about Valley Gardens and the Valley Gardens development and the fact that you'll see this building, for example, go up as one of the major arts hubs in the fringe. You'll see the Warren over the way. All the people I've met in smaller venues to work almost for nothing. If you work out the average hours that they're doing, they work their socks off and often find that the city that they're in isn't as artistically sustainable as the work they're trying to sustain. And most of us end up losing money. And art then becomes this luxury on the edges of society rather than the thing at the core of it. And a couple of years back, and it did blow my mind, there was a breakfast meeting up at the Edinburgh Fringe, and we had the head of Bulgaria's largest arts festival, which is a fringe festival, though it's not called a fringe. And he just pointed out that 3 months before the festival starts, every single one of the 350,000 tickets is sold. And just about every event of the hundreds of events addresses itself and always has done to the country's pain and its questions. And still, although less so, when the government is in trouble, when there's a crisis, it's the artists that get invited in, the poets, to come and give inspiration. And I just think we've lost that here, and we don't understand that in these Brexit times that it's actually, we should be looking to art not as something that we've cut funding to again, but actually it's the thing that shows us where to go next. And so I put this question to you now. What are we going to do about the arts in Brighton? And I invite you to just offer your ideas to that. And if that sounds cheesy, you can moan, you can complain, you can go off for a poo. I've got that recorded as well. But if you can, in whatever way you can, address yourself to that. Don't do long introductions, but it'd be good to know who you are. We can also react, just raise your hand, and there are no speeches, there are no panels. I sense, as I've already gone around this fringe, that people I'm looking at right now who I know, we're tired of the conversations, we're knackered because we're working far more hours than we're being paid for, we're trying to bring art into the city, and nobody is able to sustain paying their rent and doing stuff. That sounds like a moan. It's not. It's a call for us to finally get the arts at the heart of what's supposed to be one of Britain's most creative cities. And creative doesn't just mean graphic design, it means visual arts, it means all kinds of experimental theatre, it means disruption, it means we know where to go next because we've just been to see a show. We've got painful questions because we've just been to see someone's work. What are we going to do about the arts in Brighton and Hove? I think this is an intern from the Brighton Fringe called Julian Caddy.
Julian Caddy from Brighton Fringe. What are we going to do about the arts? I think what we need to do about the arts is to get on and do it. That's maybe a platitude in a way, but Brighton Fringe provides a platform for things to happen. So my job is to try and enable other people to create work. So what we're doing to help the arts in Brighton is to try to make sure that remains as sustainable as possible, to be able to provide a platform that enables many thousands of people to be able to go and create that work. But there needs to be a more sustainable tapestry of elements that help make that happen. That's what I think.
Are you providing a platform for people to continue to not earn a living?
At the moment, yes. It isn't something that we're able to change alone, which is why I'm talking about the tapestry that needs to be there for that to happen. If I could do without registration fees, then that would be wonderful. Unfortunately, we can't, because the way we can't earn enough money otherwise in order to do the things that we do. Even if we took away registration fees, there are many, many other costs associated with it, as you showed in your cartoon on Facebook.
So just waving your magic wand, what would Brighton Fringe be able to do in their ideal world, where every single artist was paid an annual salary and had no costs?
Well, if every artist who was paid an annual salary and had no costs, then the registration fee would be a drop in the ocean. So that there's a much larger thing to be talked about there in terms of the way artists are funded and work gets created.
Baseline costs that artists need to start up and start to make it happen, and that's what we can do to start.
So I've got a couple of things as we're going around. So we need to make registration fees irrelevant and gone, if possible. We need to make rehearsal space wherever it's needed, and not just rehearsal space for actors, all sorts of other art, free. Okay, we'll keep going.
Well, that has already answered one of my my questions, but as a local theatre maker who's been here for 19 years and has been in the teaching of artists, I've taught in various forms in the performing arts over the last 20 years. I'm interested in stepping into a place where we become a community of makers, where we support each other, where it's not against each other, or I'm doing my secret work over here, but where we are creating work that take risks before we take it to an audience. I do think there's too much safe stuff out there. I think there is too much mediocre stuff. That's how we met years ago, where you did a workshop about mediocrity out there, because that sells. And our community doesn't celebrate the risk takers yet. And that's something we need to change by becoming more present, by giving more platforms to the risk takers.
More platforms to the risk takers, something about a community, maybe it links to the adversity. We need to have a community where adversity becomes, you know, held by the community and not just a risk for somebody. Can come round, there was one over here, then coming over.
Thanks. Guy Waugh, performer, and also I run the sussexactors.co.uk website, and for 3 years with JD from Sweet Venues, we ran a festival called Hove Grown, which was designed in some way to do what Joanna was just talking about, to give people an early platform to be able to put on a show without the financial risks, which enabled them to be able to experiment a little bit more and open up opportunities. One of my big bugbears about that, though, JD might be able to speak more to this than I can, knowing the numbers, but from my purely anecdotal experience out at the shows, what I noticed was the scene was only supported by other artists. And one of the issues that we have is that it's great to talk about collaboration, and certainly that's what the Sussex Actors website is about. That's what Hove Grown was about. But actually, all we're doing is we're asking the people who are performing to pay for other people who are performing. So we're keeping the money sort of within the sector, but we're not actually developing new audiences. So my solution to that, it's a vague idea, I think, again, building on Hugh's idea, I think we need to get out into the wider community, and we need to look at art's place within Brighton and Hove, where it fits in the overall picture, how businesses look at it, how businesses can benefit from it, how we can get the Blue Rinse Brigade to pay a little bit more into things they might not take chances on otherwise. And we need to do that together. So pulling both your points together, we all need to be doing that all the time. It's not an easy solution. It's not something that I can give even a first step into. You know, we tried many times with Hove Grown to find corporate funding for it, to get a headline sponsor, to find people to sponsor even the program. But even having the resources to go out and do that was difficult. And we would ask the participants, again, to speak to people they know. And most of the sponsors we got were friends of the participants. So the bigger issue for me is where the art sits in the wider frame in Brighton and Hove, and how we can work together as a community to access those people.
Just picking up from the Bulgaria example too, what was said, and it's just interesting to bring it out as this is coming out, is art is not sponsored, art is not funded, art is paid for, and without art in all its forms, the city becomes sick. Just going to pop to David and then come to the other David. First this one.
Hi, I'm David from the Marlborough. I just had a few points, which was I think we need to do something about the fact that there's not more people of colour or any diversity represented in this room. I think we need to ask this thing about adversity, about how it's generally white people from middle class backgrounds that have a safety net that can cope with the adversity with the arts, and that we have a systemic issue where people are excluded from being able to make things, being able to call themselves an artist, being able to have any kind of semblance of a career or any access to funding. I think that we have no space in the city that is not intensely gatekeepered, that all the resources is tied up with in funded organisations that are really intensely hierarchical. If you look at, I saw an article about the Zap Club on Facebook that somebody shared today. Where is the Zap Club of now? Like, maybe we do a bit of it at the Marlborough, but there's no free, large space where young people, there's also not many young people in this room, no offence, where people can try things risk-free. And yeah, that's kind of what I've got to say.
So we're talking about who's actually in the room, who's represented, you know, is risk and adversity a middle-class luxury? Lots of important points made there too. I've also heard again the word free space and the word meaning free. Just coming to David and then round to Nick.
Well, there's two basic things, isn't there? The artists always thrive where it's cheap. And I came to Brighton when it was cheap. And so what we need is a damn good recession or something to bring rents down. Failing that, I mean, you have to start with that. Yeah, but, you know, people have to eat. So you have to start, firstly, with trying to find ways to allow people who do take risks to have the basics of their life covered. So you need to maybe pressure the council to get some kind of artist housing going. They've got it in Hastings, they've got it in other places, got it in Hackney, there's all artists' associations all over. So that's something. That's the basic, most basic thing, is giving young people and people who are, you know, starting out, who haven't got any capital to keep them rolling through the lean times, that basic thing. Otherwise, the city does die. You can see it in America, Portland and Seattle. They all become hip, become artistic centres. Then all the bankers move in and it all goes. We go to the next cheap place. That would be the other thing. We all move to Newark. But the second thing I think we need, actually, is a smaller festival. I know it sounds radical, but it gives the impression of artistic health, which we don't actually have year-round. And we need a permanent hub, a free space, whatever. Cities our size all over Britain have a rep, or they have a large art centre in the centre of town. They have something around which artists can work and use. We don't have that. And that is the major thing that's missing from the arts in Brighton permanently, is a year-round permanent sort of situation, physical situation.
That's David Mountford, who was making art when it was just a fishing village, I believe. Yeah. This is Nick Hibbard.
Yeah, hi, my name's Nick Hibbard. I'm the Executive Director for Economy, Environment and Culture at the City Council in Brighton and Hove. So I suppose I should start by asking, well, what should local government do, or what does the local government need to do to support the arts, and then perhaps some reflections on what the sector can do. So what should local government do? Well, I think we have an important role to play, particularly in a city like Brighton and Hove, in ensuring that we value arts and culture and the creative industries as a central part of the city. And so that's the first part, in terms of ensuring that we take a strategic approach, and that my role as the senior officer with responsibility for culture recognises the importance of making that case to our politicians, who are your democratically elected representatives of the city, so that we're able to ensure that the assets that we do have are effectively used and can be used for arts and culture. And then how do you ensure that those assets are used effectively and well when we have been through 9 years of austerity, and funding has been cut and prioritised and potentially deprioritised in relation to culture? Well, firstly, I think local government needs to ensure investment in cultural assets. In the council, you're seeing that is happening, but I think there's a question around whether we're prioritising the right kinds of assets or the right kind of space.
Just one comment on that, just being an oldster here too, so it's not a political comment, but before austerity, it was deprioritised as well.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's got a lot harder, So the cultural department in my department is a department of two, and one of those posts is vacant. So really, the culture department at the moment is me. I have 1,300 staff, but I have two staff in culture. So I think that just tells you the extent of deprioritisation. Having said that, within sight of this building, there are two significant cultural assets being invested in at the moment with public money, with council support. The council will own the new dance space, which will be the headquarters of South East Dance, which is currently in construction. And local government needs to do more of that, certainly, to make sure that we're playing our part. There's been a lot of conversation about free space. Free space in a city like Brighton and Hove is incredibly difficult. It doesn't exist. I mean, let's be honest. There is not free space available. However, what can local governments do to create affordable space or flexible space for artists and creatives? There's quite a lot that we can do. We are a massive asset owner. We own £1.8 billion worth of assets. And how can we think about the opportunities that might be coming? One of those opportunities might be the structural changes that are happening in retail. Over time, retail is going to contract, we would imagine, in Brighton. It's happening much more slowly in Brighton because we're such a successful city with our independent retailers. But when that does happen, we will need to reimagine the use of that space. That may be an opportunity for creatives. And then just one point in terms of what the sector should do. I just absolutely echo the point from, sorry, I didn't remember your name, David from the Marlborough, is that the sector has to make itself relevant to those that do have money, that are able to invest. And for public funding, that means demonstrating that you're inclusive, that you are reflecting the changing demographic of this city, that you're supporting the creation of skills and jobs, and that you're achieving outcomes that often are not the straight outcomes of creativity, but are obvious to you, such as health and well-being outcomes. And our Director of Public Health's report is called the Art of Good Health, which is recognising the health and well-being impact of arts and culture. But in addition to that, to make yourself relevant to corporates, you have to be able to make the case as to how central creative industries are to making people want to work and live in Brighton and Hove, because that's how corporates will attract their talent, and therefore you have to make yourself relevant for that sponsorship.
Thank you. I'm sort of going around in some sort of order, but there was... Did I miss? Who's next? I think there was one here. Remember to address the question as much as you can. What are we going to do about the arts in Brighton?
Hi, I'm Tamsin Shash. I'm Artistic Director of Brighton-based charity and national touring company Actors of Dionysus. And I've also just set up a new company called Shasher and Taylor Productions, which we're taking a show to Edinburgh this year. I think, to come back to a point that someone else was making, we have to pool resources. I wanted to ask a question. Are there any NPOs here at all? No. Why aren't there any? There's a national portfolio organisations, because I do think that there is a responsibility for NPOs to support companies who aren't funded, rather like sort of public schools supporting state schools in a sense, which is happening more and more. And I think they've got regular funding. They don't have to worry so much about applying for projects individually. They have spaces and resources, and I think that's what you were talking about in terms of Dance City. I've been to several of the planning meetings for the dance space, the new dance space, and hoping that things will come there from that. And Charlotte Vincent, I don't know if any of you go to the works, the scratch nights at the works, because those are wonderful things that the Dome do. So there are some free things that are happening out there and supporting artists, because I actually saw your work in progress, and I think that's a great thing, and I think these things should be encouraged. But they're not often always well advertised, so people don't really find out about them. But Charlotte was talking about a space which she was planning to open. I don't know what's happened about this, of a space that could offer shared resources. Has anyone heard about that? No, not at all. Okay. Well, that's just something that hopefully might transpire. But I do think more supported companies need to support those that are less well off.
So a couple of things there again about, we're hearing about shared resources, where that works for everybody, and we've got the maybe the offer that when Debenham shuts down next year, you can have it in Churchill Square.
Hi, I'm Alice Booth. I'm a freelancer and work in the community arts. I kind of think that as a community of artists, we need to maybe get more political on the bigger level. Yes, the council level, fine, but nationally, we could lobby, we could be activists to argue for a basic income, which some political parties, like the Green Party, things like that, they're proposing. If there was a basic income, then artists would be able to do some of the things that we've talked about, not have that massive pressure to just pay the rent. If everyone's, it's a pipe dream, obviously, but you did say to be creative, that would be amazing. And if we can support, as a community of artists, the parties that are proposing those kind of more radical and supportive ideas, then I think that might be a good thing.
So let's just float that one, what that you don't have to answer, but in Dublin, no income tax if you're an artist, no council tax if you're an artist in Brighton. Anyone else? Coming round, sorry, be there. No business rates as well, yeah.
Hi there, JD Henshaw, Sweet Venues and Sweet Productions. I've got a different accent from anybody else in the room. Sorry about that.
Lewis.
Yeah, no. Here we go. Right. I'm not going to do magic wand stuff, if that's okay, because I think all the magic wand things are beautiful ideas and they're absolutely correct. But if we had them, this conversation wouldn't happen, because the magic wand would have been waved. I think if we want to talk about how to make an effect on a local level, and to prove the point, which is what was suggested from the council level, we can prove the point. You can look at plenty of cities. I come from Dundee. You want to see a place that understands what economic impact of culture sector looks like? Go and actually read their studies and their reports. You can see exactly what the per pound capita is of income. GDP increases. There's a Scottish white paper that currently exists with a 10-year plan that is entirely got a section on how culture industry can outstrip the value of commercial industries such as whiskey in Scotland. And I want everybody to take a little moment to think about that. Exporting whiskey from Scotland is not as profitable as arts. Yeah, that's a good look in the room. What you need to do is actually look at cities, towns that have taken the time and invested in themselves. You can see it in small towns. You know, you look across, you're absolutely right, there's going to be a contraction in retail. That contraction in retail is hitting this city, and it will hit it harder as it goes along. You look at a city like Kirkcaldy, it has not taken that time, no matter how hard that's been happening, and Kirkcaldy looks like a ghost town and hasn't invested in that restructuring that could allow the city to become potentially an artistic hub, could invest in community, could invest in so much. So it's good to hear you say that, because that means in theory, I presume you must therefore have a planning thing in place where you're beginning to talk about strategies for that. But look at somewhere like East Nuke with its arts festival that generates an immense amount of cash out of visual arts. And that is coming from a small village sitting on the coast in Fife. This city has got far more sustainable resources, logistics, and those, if turned in the right direction and taking on the economic studies that already exist across this country, could be applied back into the arts and for actual proper investment.
And so just to summarise that, that's the fundamental idea that it's not art that needs to be funded, it's art needs to happen because it's funding for the city.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, there was just one here and we'll keep coming around.
Just a starting point for an idea, really. Things the council could potentially do, another one to add to your list. When I produced my first show back in 2013, which isn't that long ago compared to a lot of people here, one thing I did manage to do out of complete and utter naivety was go into the Holiday Inn and say, hey, you've got function rooms, you've got 10 of them, they can't all be in use all the time, can we have them for rehearsal space in exchange for supporting the show, a sponsorship on the show? And to my surprise, they went for it. So I was thinking, I appreciate this probably involves working with other departments as well, but some sort of package that could be put together that the council could put out towards corporates, towards the Chamber of Commerce, that says, this is how you can support the scene by pooling your unused resources. And yes, there may not be empty buildings, but certainly there are empty spaces within those buildings that aren't used all the time. I had a similar response from, I think it was Domestic and General at one point as well, who investigated for me and then came back and said, we can't do it at the times you need it. So there is that potential there. The flip side of that, of course, is that any time you involve the corporates, it then becomes a safe, you then have the danger of watering everything down and having to produce a safe product. But it's a starting point. And the other thing is having a central resource which lists all of the available resources in the city for everyone to access, because I think Tamsin mentioned that when events are going on, people don't know about them. Now, someone put together a website called sussexactors.co.uk, which was designed to do this, and the support that person has had in getting the word out from organisations has been nigh on nothing. And I think a lot of that is because it's just me on my own, and obviously I'm limited in my resources. So either a council version of it or a centralised version of it or some partnership working on that could be a nice development.
And in a moment we're going to go into groups around... No, we're not really... if you're hearing at the moment, as we get halfway through this, oh God, this is all very well, but it's another shitty meeting and we've said all this before, this is your opportunity to put some new stuff into the room. What are we going to do about the arts in Brighton and Hove?
Thank you. Hello, my name's Tony. I'm the production and programming manager at the Green Door Store. We're a live music venue. So obviously I'm only going to talk about one area of the arts, but one of the main issues is that we need to look at the sustainability of all of our small live music venues in Brighton, which are hugely at risk. We've lost 45% of venues in the whole of the UK in the last 5 years, six venues in Brighton alone. Many people that don't work in music would see The Great Escape and think that we have a flourishing live music scene, but actually it's not sustainable at all, and most of us are only just afloat. So I think really, if I'm going to be positive, I think that we need to engage the public more in a creative way, because we're never going to reach them just through Facebook boosts or flyers or posters. We have to think about connecting with people in a different way. I think we need a dedicated arts officer, because many, many councils around the UK have one, and they send out funding opportunities or just opportunities to work together with other local creatives. We need better engagement from the council, because we aren't getting it at the moment. We need to remove institutionalised racism that blocks what licensing might consider urban art, so things such as graffiti. I'm sure you've seen lots of stuff on the Argus recently about removing the graffiti. And just basically to value music as much as we value high art, which to me is actually theatre and comedy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just to sort of echo, The Great Escape, you know, sweeps through for 3 days, and yet we're hearing the reality of the city that's left behind.
Hi there, I'm Jamie Arnell. I'm from the Pebble Trust, and some of you may know we support both the Fringe and the festival. I suppose I'm not massively surprised to hear people feeling negative, because if you're struggling to make ends meet in your chosen field, then you know that's a difficult place to be. But I think there is more positive out there than this room would reflect. I mean, Julian and I look at the figures each year on the Fringe. The audience numbers rise, it's a huge draw to the city, it creates a massive amount of money that comes into the city that wouldn't otherwise come into the city. As Nick mentioned, we've got the festival, the Damon Festival, that are redoing the Corn Exchange, we've got funding for that, we've got the dance studio going up. It's not, I don't think, all quite as bleak as you would think if you were hearing the conversation in the room. Clearly there are challenges. One of the things that struck me early on in the conversation was the disparagement of the blue rinse. That is a massive mistake. Most of the money in this country is held by the over 50s. The arts will need to appeal to that audience. That doesn't mean it has to be safe. It's very odd the way artists tend to think that the only exciting and interesting things that you can do are things that are made by the young and appeal to the young. That's not true, and you'll need to shift that mindset, because that concentration of wealth into the over 50s is only going to continue. And so I think if there's one area that you really could focus on, is getting an offer that appeals to that audience. Because as I go around the city during Festival and Fringe, it is so vibrant, it's young, it's great, but there is a big audience that is missing. Clearly some of them are going to the festival, but I don't really see why it should be that older audience wouldn't be as seduced by the Fringe as a younger audience. So I think there's a real opportunity there, and that's one you could take.
I'm just pointing to the room again, in case people have got responses about what do we do about it, is it was said to me just outside, the frustration of artists everywhere that they, in order to practice their art, have to become an entrepreneur that generates their own salary by behaving like an entrepreneur, and the arts hasn't always been defined like that.
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm a freelance musician, and compared to most of you here, I'm pretty new to Brighton. I actually moved down here because of the music scene, which is very vibrant. I'm not sure it's as diverse as I'd have liked it to be, but that's another issue. For me, I've recently been involved with Brighton Music Office, and I've been involved with a lot of the venues. I've spent the last 6 months getting to know a lot of the venue owners, a lot of the people involved in the music industry here. Following on from what Tony said, I think there is not really adequate support from the council. And I understand that a lot of that's not due to local government policy. That's affected by, you know, national government policy as well. For example, the things that the comment made about business rates is crippling a lot of small venues. And one thing I've been looking at, or had looked at, was the possibility of Brighton becoming a music city, in inverted commas, because that's been bandied around in a lot of the circles I've been looking into. But listening to what everybody's been saying here, I think that it would be a much better thing if Brighton was labelled an arts city. And I think for me, in my initial forays into setting up Brighton, or to revitalising Brighton Music Office, was the crucial thing is communication between all the stakeholders. That includes local government, that includes all the music industry, which was what I was looking at, stakeholders. But that also includes the police, the fire brigade, it includes local businesses. I think that actually could apply to the entire arts community in this city, and if we were all communicating, me as a musician, you as a theatre, you as a whatever, we would create a much more strong and vibrant community. We'd have a lot more power in terms of what lady over there was saying about lobbying in government. If we could create a strong united front for the whole of the arts within the city, not just from my point of view or from Tony's point of view, whatever, as musicians or somebody else's point of view as theatre, if we could all somehow find some way of communicating with each other, creating a centralised hub, become Brighton Art City, then I think we'd be on a much better, stronger footing.
Something about as a community needing to feel more powerful and not so weak, maybe, as a group of artists. I'm just bringing it around. David, did you want to... Okay. David and then Simon.
There was another thing near the start that I suddenly thought, well, I'm not, you know, I think you're right about old audiences. Maybe that's because I'm getting to be one of the old audiences. But secondly, there's nothing wrong with safe. No, safe popular theatre is what keeps the ambassador full and all that money going into private coffers week after week after week. If we don't try and get some of that money in the public sector and feed it out in to the more risky bits of work and the more avant-garde bits of work, then we're being foolish. We're ignoring a major source of income. And of course, once people start getting, I'm thinking maybe of the Curve in Leicester, which is where I grew up. They've got the Curve, they've got the Haymarket, and they all feed. They've got like 9 or 10 little fringe theatres, better and better equipped than ours. And this is in Leicester, and they all feed in to each other, and the Curve is the central hub. So, you know, they go out and they find local actors, they find local writers, and they get funded. And so, but you need that central place where, you know, the Blue Rinse, I've not seen the Blue Rinse for 20 years, by the way, but the blue where the Blue Rinses go, if you like, see, I don't know, One Man, Two Masters or something like that, and then next week they might go and see something in the studio, and then their children might go and blah blah blah. So it's about including everyone in the arts and not being snobbish, in my opinion.
I forgot to mention we had one email in too, that just somebody who couldn't be here also said we need that our main newspaper needs to be covering the arts again, and it's currently has got Festival 2018 on its headline, so it doesn't seem to be covering it this year at all. I'm just going to go to Simon and then Sue.
Thanks, Paul. There's a one-word answer to the last three speakers, and that's Hippodrome. Now, people know about the Hippodrome in the Middle Street, and a lot of people know that, of course, the older generation knew it very, very well. It was a venue until 65. It was a bingo hall till 07. I sort of wake up on Monday mornings thinking, oh, God, I'm chair of the effing Hippodrome, aren't I? Which is sort of, you know, rather like a kind of, one might say, sort of folk memory. It's gone through a lot of permutations. There's been a campaign live now since 2013. It was poo-pooed by the council. And there are a couple of things to be said. One thing is the council have come round hugely because X amounts of thousands of pounds, something in the region of £80,000, have been spent on think tanks towards getting a particular hub going. The idea of the Hippodrome, it's seats around 1450 to 1500. That's more than the... basically the Theatre Royal, which is 990. It's a circle in the round. You can get a lot of people in who you cannot get with basically, obviously, you cannot get Billy Elliot into the Theatre Royal. It's enormous potential, studio theatres and so on, and its capacity for being a hub are self-evident. The trouble was you've got developers, you've got people being timorous, you've got people faffing about. It's a boring story, but basically it ends up that Mr. Sheikh now owns it, and he's trying to turn it into a kind of another restaurant or a cinema, which is what we were trying to oppose back in 2013. There's a big public meeting going on about this. But the thing to be said about this is that if it did become that, it's now got a lot of councillors on the side, and the really important thing here, as I've learned, one is the officers in the council, especially when you've got new councillors on board, the officers need to be traduced, they need to be seduced, they need to have everything done to them to make them see what kind of money you can bring in from the arts for Brighton, because, I mean, the arts are still the second highest, and you have to think in these terms, it's the second highest earning of, you know, all our sort of industries now. It's our second biggest industry in the country. And it's the old adage from the Boyle Report back in 2000, get one, put £1 in, get five out. That is important. And the second thing is basically they're much more on side. The problem with the Hippodrome is a big issue that simply, I feel, a range of things didn't happen. The young people weren't engaged. Certain people were engaged in terms of going out, agitpropping, and actually really making it turn around for a while. And there are internal issues with that. But the big thing is basically try to keep the councillors and the officers engaged and try to persuade, particularly, I think, certain members of the Labour Party and certain Greens to say, this can really work for us.
Good. And Sue?
Hi, Sue Bradley. I used to be a street artist, and then via being head of drama at Varndean School and then creative director of Creative Partnerships for the Arts Council, I'm now a street artist again. And it's been really interesting. Back when I was in Pookie Snackenberger in the early 80s, we used to do a lot of busking on the streets of Brighton, and we would do a show and people would stop and watch us for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Now, with the show I'm in now, people will maybe watch for 2, 3, 4 minutes. They'll take a picture on their phone, upload it to Instagram, and then off they go. So we've got a very, very different audience out there. But what I really wanted to address was a theme that's coming up is one of the age discrimination within our sector. And, you know, myself and my co-performers, you know, we're the oldest street performers on the block. And something that we're finding is that we're having difficulty selling our product. So Glastonbury, for instance, they look at our show, which has words attached to it like gentle, whimsical, heartwarming, makes you feel young again. And they go, oh, what even is that? It's not exciting. It's not in your face. It's not full of young people jumping around. So my question is, within street arts, is you know, are we even producing a product that the Blue Rinse Brigade would like? And the Blue Rinse Brigade, you know, I was thinking of doing my hair blue, obviously, do have a lot of money and do want to see stuff, but we're not producing what they want. You know.
I just wanted to come back to Julian just quickly, just you've heard some of this. What would be on your wish list for the Fringe to not have to charge anything? What would be your call to the council or anyone to make Brighton Fringe sustainable?
I think Nick knows the answer to this question. It's sustainable funding. In order for us to be able to do what we do and do it better, do more of it, we need to be sustainable as an organisation centrally. We don't spend very much because we don't have it, but we also have to do an awful lot of begging and borrowing to be able to get things done, relying on volunteers, very inexperienced staff teams. It makes it very, very difficult for us to plan. We really go from one festival to another, and we can't effectively have a 3-year, 5-year strategy without knowing that we can achieve it. So it's short-term funding that we're having to apply for, just as individual artists are having to do across the city and across the country. There isn't that institutional long-term support for key organisations such as ours.
And I guess it means that a lot of people have to pay to play, which is what we've been talking about art not being sustainable. I'm just going to come over just to Adrian, who hasn't spoken, here in this gorgeous flat pack of a building that goes up in a few days but runs here for a month. And we started this meeting with you in a place of frustration. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to also address this question in a positive way. You know, what do we need to do about the arts in Brighton and Hove?
I'd like to pick up on Mr. Music Man's comment about communication, particularly from the council, because it's fairly common knowledge we've been having an extreme lack of communication for the outdoor event sites. with the Valley Gardens development. Brighton Fringe, massive success story, England's largest arts festival, and the driver over recent years has got to be the outdoor sites, the Warren, the Ladyboys, and the Spiegel Tent here. You know, those, that they're not what the Fringe is about, but they are drivers. They are visible flagships that, that bring in people from all over town and bring them people from outside. And this is year 7 of Brighton Spiegel Tent. There's a lot of things that have talked about that I like to think we do very well. We do a lot of diversity. You'll see all forms of human society are here. We've always built the event. The event relies on commercial sponsorship. You know, this event wouldn't have existed for 5 or 6 years if it wasn't for Heineken. And now, you know, the reality of it, it's Budweiser that is sponsoring the arts. It is Budweiser branding it as Michelob Ultra. So we're doing 120 shows. We've got shows coming from 12 countries, I think. We do deaf signing shows. We do relaxed performances. We do swing dance, tea dance, Sunday jazz breakfast for the Blue Rinse Brigade. Don't like that term, but anyway, it's been bandied about. The model relies on alcohol because of the context. You know, we've set out to strike that balance, and I like to think that we do a reasonably good balance of, as I say, the cultural offer. I'm very proud of our cultural offer. It only exists thanks to the alcohol, but it does exist, and we're making it happen, and we're here, and we're a great... We sell 20,000 tickets, and we have 100,000 people through the doors over the month. So Brighton Council is implementing this Valley Gardens road development scheme, and we haven't been involved in the process. We don't know what the future is. I have, you know, all the brand reps in last night. They all want to do deals for next year. I don't know what happens next year.
So there's some comments about community. There's some comments about the circle, about communication. I'll come back to you in a sec. I'm just going to give people that haven't spoken a chance because we're coming back to the last few minutes.
Thank you. This is Robert Cohen, actor, writer, etc. Julian was talking about the Fringe and what it provides, and the Fringe is not the arts in this town, because many people in this town are doing creating work all year round, but it is hugely important. And personally, I would like to see it pull itself out from under the shadow of the festival. It's already done that to some extent by extending a week after the festival finishes. I don't understand this thing why it has to be in May, just because it always has been. For one thing, the weather is extremely variable. I was thinking as I came out tonight that I'd rather just stay in, given that it's not that warm. Yes, I would love to see you just completely detach it in time terms and just sort of pull it forward or back a few weeks so that it's not clashing with the festival and at least not having to compete with the festival that gets all that Arts Council money. And I would like to see you going for a lot more of that Arts Council money to put into the Fringe. Thank you.
And
yeah. Hi, my name's Adrian. I'm the actor, director, producer of The Other Realm, so I produce my own stuff and I lose my own money, so there we are. One of the fundamental problems that we have, as I see it, is the potential audience, the people out there, their attitude towards us and what we do at this kind of level. Now, one of the things I've heard bandied around quite a lot today is the word free. The real problem with the word free is that it has such a connotation to a lot of our potential audience, because they associate so much of the Fringe and this kind of level of performance that we're doing with being low cost, low value, no value. And the problem is we're trying to put a price on it to them, and their concept is, why should I pay? They won't think once or twice about going to see one of the big shows in the West End at 60 quid a ticket. They'll think twice about paying 6 quid to come and see something on their doorstep. Now, why is that? And part of that problem is coming from us, because we're promoting constantly free, free, free. Okay, I was talking to Maureen Beattie, the president of Equity, the other day about this very problem, this fundamental issue of free. Because if you're giving away it for free, there's no value to it. And if there's no value to it, where's your money coming from? Which means you've got to create it internally. If you can't create it externally, you're creating it internally. And at the moment, we can't create it internally because we have no substantial way of being able to pull resources to do it. So it's got to come from the outside. It has to.
I'm going to give the last word to James in a moment. I'm just going to come back to two people here who have been waiting. So we'll come to Nick.
Hello, I'm John Halpern. I'm a crypto crossword setter. And I can tell you that Blue Rinse is an anagram of nebulizer. Arguably I'm in the arts as well, and it was a very, very long time before I managed to pay the bills from what I do. And I just want to say, I kind of feel like a slight outsider. Paul lives on my road. He's a great guy that lives on our road. I live at a house called One Across. So I kind of started to think from, not from necessarily an artist's point of view, but from someone who comes to your shows and loves you. And I just want to say how much, speaking for the whole of Brighton, what joy everyone in this room brings to this city. Thank you very much. But I'm trying to think, you know, my experience is that people want to contribute, and sometimes we don't know how. And I'm just wondering if there's some way that we could, for instance, set up something that's in the system, like from the council, that where we're contributing, for example, £1 a month extra to our council's tax, or choosing to do so, or giving a choice that we know will go to the Brighton arts scene, and whether, for instance, the Argus can pull up the socks and sponsor something like that and get behind a campaign that will set ourselves up. Because I'm just imagining, if I'm paying £1 a month and 100,000 people do that, is that £1 million a year or something? There's a lot. So
£100 a month, that was, you said then. I'm sorry. Yeah. Just as we draw this to a close, too, I'm going to go to Nick and then just James, and we're going to have a little bit of time if you just want to hang around and continue the conversations. But I know you might want to respond to something else, but part of the spirit of this conversation is, what if, just as the council has people that work for it and have salaries, what if everyone here was salaried as they walked out? And as JD said, we just know that the benefit financially, in all sorts of other ways, that comes back to the city is going to be a surplus. So it's a no-brainer. So rather than something at the end of the budget, it just is a no-brainer. It's an interesting one that's come out.
I mean, I certainly think that supporting the cultural economy and the creative industries is has to be a significant part of any economic strategy for any city, but particularly for a city of Brighton and Hove. And perhaps universal income or something like that is the way that you might get to a salary, but that's something that's probably beyond the powers of the City Council. Just a couple of things in terms of being able to reflect on some of the things that have been said from a local government perspective. We do recognise the challenges around live music. There's been a live music partnership, and there's a live music roundtable that we're always interested in getting involved in, and also in urban art. We genuinely recognise the role of graffiti. Not a big fan of tagging, but graffiti is art. Tagging, perhaps not, but the differing views. And recently I was talking at the Brighton Music Conference around the role of electronic music in the city, which I think has a role to play. In terms of funding, I just would reflect that one of our challenges is that from an Arts Council perspective, I don't think there's anyone here from the Arts Council, I'm meeting them tomorrow morning, they would say Brighton has too much money. So that is a challenge that we have to address. There is such a rich sector in the city that it's really hard to continue to persuade the Arts Council to fund the city. So it's just something to be aware of. The Hippodrome, you're absolutely right. It could be a lyric theatre. I've met with the community interest company a number of times. Your big challenge is to work with the owner, because he owns the building. And then lastly, we do have an arts manager. It's Bramwyn Lorigan. Unfortunately, she's not at work at the moment, but she will be back soon. And we will have an assistant director for culture. I'm just sifting through 62 applications for that vacant post. So we are putting resources in.
Thank you. James?
I feel bad having a last word, because I don't think it's good. But I just wanted...
like audiences are key, right? So we talk about arts development and what we need as artists and how we can support the sector. There is, we're the sixth most engaged borough in the country in terms of audiences coming to art stuff or engagement culture each year. It's a huge audience to come to Brighton Fringe. So there's a resource there and it sits within us and there is money and stuff like that. So I was here for Camille O'Sullivan on Friday, which is a very diverse audience of different ages. But, you know, knock out arts that sort of exist in that way. So I think there's my... So I would focus on audiences. I work at a venue in Hove, and as much as we want to support artists, we can't do it if four people come. There's no economy for that, so we need to put on work. There is a the gatekeeper role within that isn't necessarily keeping people out. It's making sure there's a balance between how important the art is and how many people want to come and see it. So there's a culture change that can work around that. And my final point just about monolithic organisations and the monocultural tone of the city, I think I completely agree with what David was saying earlier. And I think it's class. If we can achieve a barrier across class or across the arts, then the diversity will be much easier to come through from that. How we do that, I don't know. But I look to people like Naomi in Brighton's People Theatre and people who are working outside of our areas of the city that can see the sea. I think that's where the good stuff is going to come.
So just to draw things to a close, I hope we haven't just walked over the same old cemetery of our own, you know, past conversations. There are clearly some ideas in there that, you know, maybe they're just dreams, but hopefully the people in the room, some people have heard what has been said. We'll certainly get an attempt to get this recording out, and if it's not good quality, we'll write it up and get those ideas out. I guess we do need to have more conversations like this, but in the end, what are we going to do about the arts is that everybody in the room needs to make a living from it. And we still have that problem to solve because it's not a hobby for people here who said this is the thing I want to do in my life. And at the moment, it's on the end of a long list of priorities rather than seen as the means for the other priorities to get sorted out. So thank you for communication. Yeah. And we can do that, and maybe community and the rehearsal space stuff again and the sharing of resources. And there's been suggestions that some of the organisations and platforms maybe can start to take a lead on that a bit more. So please stay around and go up to those people and see if you could just bed in those into some more actions. But thanks for coming. We're over. There's a little bit of time to continue the conversation. And the Fringe is happening right now as well. So go and support your local artists, at least with a bit of your time. Thanks a lot. We're done.